This is the Jazz Rocks Podcast, where the past, present, and future of jazz fusion lives. Here are musician and radio personality Tom Alexander and author and musicologist Walter Koloski.
Welcome, everyone. It is the Jazz Rocks Podcast, show number 21. My name is Tom Alexander, and as always, I'm joined by Walter Koloski from Boston. Hey, Walter.
Hi, Tom. How have you been?
Doing very well, thank you. Juggling a lot of different projects, musical and otherwise.
Better to be busy than not busy.
Yes, yes it is. Yes, it
Tom,
is.
Tom,
yes.
Tom.
Yes, yes.
We recently talked to a giant.
Yeah, we did talk to a giant. In fact, so much so, I needed a step stool.
Okay, we'll edit that out. Just kidding. We talked to arguably the father of fusion. I know some people say it's Miles Davis. I say it's John McLaughlin.
I know you do. And I concur. He is absolutely father of the music and a titan and deserves every accolade he's ever gotten and will ever get.
I don't think he would say that.
Yeah.
It's just what I say. And the reason I say that is just the commercial appeal aspect of it and the true fusing of rock and jazz. And in those earlier recordings with Miles and, of course, Tony Williams' Lifetime and some of John's earlier recordings like Devotion, it was getting there, but everything hadn't clicked as far as appreciation of the music world as it did when Mahavishnu Orchestra happened.
Yeah. And, you know, I wish I could step into a time machine, Walter, because I was a little young when they first hit the scene. And, you know, but man, everything I've ever heard, read, firsthand accounts from people I know that saw the band, including you in that first iteration, just unbelievable. That's all I could say. That's they head scratching, eye popping, unbelievable.
I've interviewed John quite a few times. This time is different, however. Over the last couple of years and talking to John just on a personal basis, he's become really tired of being asked the same questions over and over and over, thousands of times, in fact. You know, what was it like playing with Miles Davis? You know, what were those days like? And what was it like meeting so-and-so? And he's repeated the answer so many times that these days it's almost by rote that he has to answer.
Yeah.
So we decided when we approached him this time, we decided to take a different tact and make the interview about one topic, hopefully something that he enjoyed talking about, and that way get some answers that aren't in all the other interviews. So that's what we did. And we talked to him about live performance, as he approaches it both as performer and audience member.
You know, the thing with John, too, is that when you go to see him, there is an anticipation about him walking on stage, at least in the times I've seen him, that it's unlike anyone else. You know, there he carries with him something that precedes his appearance on stage. And I know that, you know, there's a buzz in the audience. There's a buzz in the room. You know, there's always those people. There's you can count them on one hand, really, that they light up a room when they walk in. John's one of those guys. It goes beyond the music. He just commands a room.
There's an aura in both ways that you talked. And I've discussed this before about the way the Mahavishnu Orchestra looked on stage. And of course, John was a part of that. And I'll tell you a very quick story. Years ago, I was with my friend Ted McCallion in New York City, down in Greenwich Village. And it was during the daytime. It was so crowded. There were thousands of people on the street, and we were hanging out in the corner. We had come to see Chick Corea and his birthday celebration. I can't remember when that was. And in fact, I can't even remember if that's what it was at this point. But John was a guest, was going to be a guest. You know, 8 or 9 hours later. So there's thousands of people out in the street. I'm talking to my buddy Ted. I look down the street, and I'm not kidding you, about 300 yards, maybe 200 yards, I won't exaggerate, 200 yards down the street, I see the back of a silver-haired gentleman walking away. I turn to Ted, And I said, that is John McLaughlin. 200 yards away, only from seeing the back of the head.
Yeah.
I said, I'm going to go get him. So sure enough, you know, like, you know, running through the airport or whatever you want to do to get to a late plane. Just as I approached the guy, he turned around. Walter! So there it was. This aura exuded in this crowd of thousands of people walking down the street in New York. You know, I just knew it was John McLaughlin. There were other gray-haired people around, but, you know, just from that great distance, I could hone in. This physical aura spoke to me as well as the musical one. So also we should tell our podcast fans that John spoke to us at length, and we had too much to put on one show. So we're going to use some of the material for future shows. We're going to talk about the new album, Is That So?, a very special album that he did with the vocalist Shankar Mahadevan and Zakir Hussain. And we're probably going to figure out how to do a show about John Coltrane or something related to that, because we talked at length about John Coltrane. Those will appear in future shows. For this show, we talk about how the great John McLaughlin approaches live performance as a performer and as a listener, and we'll hear back from John after these messages.
Everybody, this is your brother Narn Michael Walden. You are listening to the Jazz Rocks podcast with Tom Alexander and the great Walter Koloski. Blessings.
Transformation is the new album from Spanish fusion group Aurora Clara. Born from the foundations of flamenco, Indo, jazz fusion, and world music, Aurora Clara's electricity is powered by cultural flavors, seasoned by heavy doses of inventive improvisation. Noted flamenco guitarist Raul Manola plugs in for the first time in 30 years to lead a tight ensemble of remarkable musicians through their creative paces. The legendary violinist Jerry Goodman also makes a very special guest appearance. Transformation is available from Bandcamp at auroraclara.bandcamp.com. Aurora Clara's Transformation will soon be offered as a limited vinyl edition too. Transformation from Aurora Clara on the Ukulele music label. Transformation will transform you.
Before we talk to John, let's listen to a cut from the John McLaughlin and Harder Things album, Live in Paris. This is Seven Sisters. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, John. Meet Tom Alexander.
Oh, hello there, Tom. It's John here. How are you doing?
Doing well, John. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
John, on this Jazz Rocks podcast, we're going to talk about how you approach live performance, both as a player and listener. Years ago, you told me how important it was that you had a chance to perform at a class at school. I'm quoting, "The class was a public, and the moment you stand up and try to do something in front of the public is when you start learning."
No, I remember very distinctly. It's engraved in my memory, this little concert in front of the class, because there's an energy that happens the minute you stand up in front of people that's coming from you, but it's also coming from the audience. Whether it's 1, 2, or 2,000, there's an energy that comes from the listener. It's kind of a listening energy. And these two meet on the stage. And this is, how can I say, it's impossible to reproduce this energy in the studio. That said, I don't negate what can happen in the studio, because there are two different ways of playing, two different ways of recording, recording we do in the studio. But you can always tell the difference between a live recording and a studio recording, because the energy is of a different quality. I think you would agree, no?
Yes.
But you don't have to be in front of a public to learn. What it does is it just accelerates your learning. Shall I tell you just a little anecdote? Maybe I mentioned it before. It's when I first started going around the pubs in my little town way in the north of England. There's always been a good pub scene for jazz in the UK. Even though I was not old enough to go in the pub and drink, I was 17. I was just very eager to start jamming, playing with any of the good players. And so I would schlep my guitar and amp to the pub and walk in. I mean, at least I could pass for 18. And I'd go to the band and the band leader, and I'd say, you know, can I sit in with you? And sometimes they'd say no. But the very first time they said yes. And I was very excited, so I sat in. And of course, it was the jazz old school. I plugged in. And so the band leader said, okay, you ready? I said, yes, I'm ready. And he counted off, okay, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4, do, 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 dee, da, 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 which is Cherokee, the very famous tune, mm-hmm, recorded right by Charlie Parker at 150,000 miles an hour.
Yes.
And I knew this was going to be crash and burn. and he took a solo, and then he turned around to me, okay, play. And of course, it was really crash and burn. And after that one tune, I packed up my guitar and went home with my tail between my legs. But the experience of playing live and crashing and burning was super accelerated learning, because I realized in the space of the 10 minutes that I was on that bandstand, more than I realized probably in the past year of working and practicing. Really, I think this is the essence of live playing, especially when you're young. The thing is later, is what I mentioned before about the energy that's shared when you're on stage between the public. Even after you've played 1,000 concerts, the nerves are there, but the nerves are good. Without the nerves, you'd be a bot, wouldn't you, really? A robot. You wouldn't be human. There's always this wonderful nervousness as you go on stage to play, because that energy comes and hits you, and it's hopefully it's mutual.
You talk about energy, the energy you receive from the audience and the energy you receive back. Now, I once read that you attended a Bill Evans concert, that's the pianist Bill Evans. At the time, you talked about how moving and transcendental his performance was that night, but later you heard a tape of the show and it didn't have the same effect on you. Can you share about that?
Because there's something about the present moment. When you're watching somebody play, you're both living, or you are all living in that one present moment, which is the only moment we have. And if the music has that quality, then the moment becomes transcendental and it becomes mystical or magical, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
I've had amazing experiences from recordings, but the act of being in the present moment with the person who's creating this beauty, this coming off the stage, or passion, or whatever you want to call it, all the different qualities that exist in music, this present moment, which is so new, because when it becomes transcendental, is you use the word, and I would say that's a very good word to use, because if a moment becomes transcendental, then it becomes almost eternal. It's something that will mark you forever, and you'll never forget it. I suppose you could have moments like this listening to recordings. I've had them, but to be in the present moment is the only moment we have, Tom. And to share that moment and share that moment of transcendental beauty or passion or whatever it may be is absolutely unique, cannot be reproduced. It's the same when you're playing, only as a listener, if you're swept away and taken into the marvelous, beautiful world of the musician, then it's identical just from the other point of view.
In the same vein, John, social networking, one of the positive aspects of it is we get to live your life vicariously, and we see you go to many concerts, not just jazz concerts, but you'll go see Carlos, Ringo, Toto, and your friend Steve Lukather. You'll go to classical music concerts. When you're in India, I'm told you attend a lot of shows there. And I assume this is not just social, to see old friends and new friends, but it invigorates you in a certain way, does it not? Isn't it a continuation of that transcendental aspect you were just talking about?
For me to discover a musician that I've never heard before, and he makes me forget all about myself, this is a great accomplishment as far as I'm concerned. And they take me into their world. This is all I want when I go to a concert, whatever it may be. Because I go to classical concerts here. I mean, over the years, I have quite a number of classical musician friends. And if they're in the neighborhood or, not far, then I will go to see them because the genre of the music is of little importance. It's what is contained in the music. First of all, the music itself is beautiful, but the music and the life that the person puts into it, or the love, or the affection, or the tenderness, or the passion, or whatever, is that's all I'm waiting for. And if I'm sitting there and they sweep me away into their marvelous world, I cannot ask for anything more. That's all I want, really. I want them to take me away. You know, if I find myself looking at my watch and I say to my wife or whoever, you hungry?
Yeah.
Not a good sign, So that's really it. I want to forget all about the world. I want to forget about all me and my world, just to be part of their world. This is the great thing about music.
We'll be back with part two of our conversation with John McLaughlin in a moment.
Mahatmosphere is a power fusion band that melds molten rock from the Earth's swirling core with the deep organic roots from its crust. The result? Beautiful Dirt. Beautiful Dirt is both zen and grunge, presented with a cinematic thrust. It is as compelling as any progressive music heard today. Mahatmosphere is Marco Anderson on drums, Mark Lawrence on guitar, and Al Swanger on bass. The best place to get Beautiful Dirt is on Bandcamp at Mahatmosphere, MAHATMOSPHERE.bandcamp.com, MAHATMOSPHERE.bandcamp.com. Follow Mahatmosphere on Facebook. Beautiful Dirt. Beautiful Dirt. Beautiful Dirt.
Now return to our conversation with John McLaughlin.
I know you never got to see John Coltrane, but did you ever see Jimmy, the Beatles, Nina Simone? What are Indian classical players in your formative years? I know those are still going on, John, but the concerts that really egged you on, they really made an impression upon you to drive you even further.
I'll never forget the first blues musician that I heard was Big Bill Brunsey. And it was out of this world. I was just in bliss, if I can put it like that. It was just fabulous. And I must have been about 15 when I saw him. And wow, so lucky. I never got to see Muddy Waters, unfortunately. But I was listening to him before he moved over to the electric guitar, when he was playing with Little Walter and just an acoustic bass player. Those recordings of him really were amazing. And Big Bill, of course, I knew, but to get to see him play, this was like a revelation. Let me think. Another revelation, Miles, of course, when I saw him live with Tony and Wayne. That would be in the early 60s.
Was that at Ronnie Scott's, or where did you see Miles?
No, he was playing at a jazz festival in London. I think it was something like the Hammersmith Odeon, where they used to have. And Train did come to London. Coltrane did come to London. But I was, surviving, playing with a rhythm and blues band. And ironically enough, we had a gig at an American Air Force base. They always look for rhythm and blues bands, the British rhythm and blues bands. And that night the Train was playing, I had a gig with the R&B band on an American base. So that's life, isn't it? I miss them. I did have friends while I was in the UK who had seen him play. At the Vanguard, for example, and one particular tenor player, Dick Hexel-Smith, with whom I played with Alexis Corner, Graham Bond, Jack Bruce, and Ginger Baker, in those flamenco days in the mid-60s. I'll never forget. I think he went to America with, who was the blues band that Eric Clapton was with? John Mayall,
yeah.
And he was there, and he stayed because Coltrane had a week at the Vanguard, and he was telling me he went down there every night, and he said from the first night he was fighting himself, fighting his inability to articulate what he was feeling inside. the great inarticulate, if you know what I mean. Mm. Because essentially what we're feeling deep down is very difficult to articulate. And he said the fight went on every night. But he said, but this fight is beautiful. It's actually beauty itself, because you see a human being who is already very advanced and seeking the inner truth in a way which lies deep down in all of us, and his desire and his passion to be able to articulate that. And he said, but on the last night, he got it. He said, and even though it was beautiful to see the fight, and I consider that the same, even though at times, especially in the younger days, I would come back from a concert feeling quite suicidal, but because I played so badly, I know, and I had faith that the fight was, in fact, still beautiful. But Dick told me that on the last night he was transcendental, and that I mean, even if he hadn't been, it would have been all worthwhile. So just to hear that kind of a witness to Coltrane, I felt very close I felt closer to Train because of Dick telling me that story.
We're speaking with the great guitarist, innovator, composer, John McLaughlin. I think that's okay, right?
well, yes, go ahead.
John, in an interview on the Tomorrow Show with Tom Snyder way back here in 1978, Chick Corea and Herbie Hancock were asked what their goal was when playing in front of a live audience. And they responded by saying, and I'm paraphrasing a little bit here, that they were trying to find the same type of rapport with their audience that John McLaughlin was able to find with his audience. What is the rapport you're trying to establish with an audience?
I'm not trying anything. I'm not trying consciously to establish a rapport. I think the minute I'm on stage, I have a direct connection with whoever's there, because they're human beings and they're part of me. I know, and this deep down, this truth deep down in myself, that we're all part of one supreme consciousness, whether we're aware of it or not. But the minute I see the people there, I feel absolutely connected to them. So I don't have to really try to do anything, because the reality is so much more powerful than me trying to do something in terms of establishing a rapport. This is on a different level, I think, Tom, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
There's something, the minute I feel them already before I go to the stage, but when I go to the stage, they're there and I'm there and we're all one. They want what I want when I go to a concert, and we're all the same. It doesn't matter what environment or what culture we come from. Music is the great leveler of all of us. And when you go to a concert, when I go to a concert, what I spoke about before, they want to enter my world somehow through the music. And the music is the bridge, is a real time and spontaneous bridge that allows us to connect in a deeper way. What we feel is what goes back to what I was saying just a few minutes ago. What actually, we're going to play music, we want to play tunes, but we improvise, because improvisation is the heart and soul of the music that I play, whatever name you want to ascribe to it. Indie music is the same, whether it's north or south. Improvisation is living in the present moment. The present moment is the only moment that we really have. And the music, we cannot hide. If you're on stage, the minute you're playing, you, believe me, your trousers are down by your ankles. There's nothing you can do about it. So just enjoy it. What can I say to the people through the music? Yes, the tunes we play, hopefully they're beautiful and they're well played and they're meaningful. But then we come to improvise. And the only story I have is my life story and the experiences that are unspeakable, really, because the minute I try to speak about my internal experiences, whether musical or otherwise, I become inarticulate, because the level of words doesn't belong there. The only way words would correspond to those is if I recited spontaneous poetry. So music comes in, and music is able to make that direct connection. And if because I'm telling the same story every night, the thing is, every night is completely different because every moment is different. Every moment is new. If we really in the right state of consciousness, we can truly experience bliss and absolute joy of existing in the present moment. Of course, I'm relating now to another aspect of life, the inner life, which is very important to me and has been important to me for the majority of my life, and actually comes first. Because if I'm going to say my story should be rich and I should be able to articulate it through music, because that's my medium of expression. But at the same time, you cannot, as a musician, go to the stage thinking about different aspects of music you've worked on. Music, if I'm thinking, then I'm on the wrong level. I'm on the level of discursive thought, which is where words belong. We're right now in that level of discursive thought. It's very interesting and very necessary to life. But to bring music to the level of discursive thought is an impossible task. We go to the stage, you go to the stage and throw caution to the wind, especially in your improvisations. Because if you're thinking, you're not playing. So you have to abandon thinking and play and be who you are, who you really are in your depth. And that story will come out of its own way, because things happen when you are in another state of mind, another state of consciousness, that allows those things to come up. And if we're really inspired, which can happen, but for which you have absolutely zero control over, but we live and pray for that to happen, then if the inspiration is there, that moves in, that takes over, and this is where you become truly who you are and articulate. And that, yeah, and all the aspects of music, whether they're beauty, whether they're eloquence, whether they're elegance, whether they're poignant, whether they're tragic, joyful, blissful, they all come out spontaneously in the present moment. And this is what really I live for.
Yeah.
It's really the most special communication there is, as far as I'm concerned. And you're telling your story, John, to say 1,000 people, but they hear 1,000 different stories.
Of course, but we all take what we want out of music. But this is what's fantastic about music. I mean, you have two people who listen to Coltrane or Miles or Bach or Mozart, whoever, and they will both take from the music what their mind needs, what their heart needs, what their soul needs, what they desire. consciously or unconsciously. And music is, how shall I say, so full of blessings, and it's a cornucopia of inner feelings, if you know what I mean. And you can take out of it, it's like a huge pannier basket of delightful, beautiful things, and we can take whatever we want, and it's free. It's quite a magical thing, but you know, reminds me of what Einstein said, God bless him. He said, really, there are two ways to live. Miracles cannot happen, or you live in a way because everything is a miracle. And in a way, music is part of that magical aspect of life.
John, we could continue talking to you forever, but actually, I should say John G. But thanks,
Walter G. Walter G.
Thanks so much. Thanks so much for being our guest on the Jazz Rocks podcast.
Oh, you're very welcome.
We hear one more piece now from John McLaughlin, along with Paco de Lucia from the 1981 album Friday Night in San Francisco. This is Frevo Rosgado. Thank you.
Wolfgang Schark's obsession is music, and Wolfgang Schark's music will become your obsession. Obsession from guitarist Wolfgang Schark, available at Amazon.com and at WolfgangSchark.com. That's WolfgangSchark.com.
Hi, I'm Tom Alexander.
And I'm Walter Koloski from the Jazz Rocks Podcast.
If you're like a lot of people, you've probably received a few gift cards this past holiday season.
Maybe you're wondering what to give yourself. Why not music?
We urge you to support the many artists who've appeared on this podcast, from the legendary figures who helped create jazz rock fusion to the modern trailblazers of today.
And Tom, I'd have to add your very own Earth Code album, Tones from the Middle Distance, to that list. Available at Apple Music and wherever digital music is sold.
Well, thanks, Walter. And of course, for you Mahavishnu Orchestra fans out there, and we know there are plenty, make sure to check out Walter's Mahavishnu books on Amazon.
But first and foremost, please support the music and artists that mean so much to all of us.
Thanks for listening to our 2019 series of podcasts.
And get ready for a music-filled and fun 2020, right here on the Jazz Rocks Podcast.
The Jazz Rocks Podcast, along with Walter Koloski. I'm Tom Alexander. Walter, what can you say? Always a lot of fun to talk to the great John McLaughlin.
Always a pleasure. It's just, and just to learn and listen, it's his words as powerful as his music. I've always found that to be the case. It always drew me to him, even from the beginning.
Yeah.
There's a curiosity about life, the artistic life, the spiritual life, the everyday life. One of the things you discover about John, if you've had the pleasure of getting to meet him at all, is that despite being the genius person he is, once again, he would cringe if I said that, he's very down to earth.
Yeah, there's no question. He makes time for people. He, you know, I'll tell you really quick. You shared a quick story earlier in the show. I'll just share this with you really quickly. When my son was about 12, I guess, we went to see the five-piece band. And of course, it was John with Chick Corea and
Brian Blades
and Christian McBride. And I'm trying to recall, it might have been Kenny Garrett.
Yes.
Yeah. So wonderful show. And afterward, we had some backstage access after the show and went back to see Chick, see John, and a couple others. And John just made such time and took such an interest, almost in a grandfatherly way, with Peter, who at the time was, you know, like I said, he was like 12 years old and playing, you know, just starting out in like a school band, playing sax and flute and different things. And he took a genuine interest in what Peter was doing with music and just thought it was great. And I was just so impressed by that, that he would take the time to talk to a 12-year-old kid who's just kind of getting started in music. And I thought, wow, you know, here's a guy that's at the top, the very, very top of the food chain in music, and he's making time for this young man. And I was just, I've never forgotten it.
I've been told similar stories more times than I can tell you.
Yeah.
And in fact, he did a few favors for me in that realm for some young musicians, which I've always appreciated. So we have more from John McLaughlin in upcoming shows. A great honor to have John on the show, and at least today to learn about his approach to live music performance. Tom, where are you from?
I'm from Miami. Walter, where are you from?
This is Walter Koloski from Boston.
This is the Jazz Rocks Podcast. We thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time. So long, everybody.
This has been the Jazz Rocks Podcast with Tom Alexander and Walter Koloski. Tom Alexander is a jazz musician and voiceover artist based in Miami, Florida. Walter Koloski is a music journalist and historian who lives just outside of Boston. The Jazz Rocks podcast is produced by Alexander Productions. This program was recorded at Studio Alpha in Miami and can be heard on iTunes and SoundCloud. You can follow the Jazz Rocks podcast on Twitter at JazzRocksPC and on Facebook at the Jazz Rock Fusion page. If you wish to advertise on the Jazz Rocks podcast or make any inquiry of Tom or Walter, please email us at info@alexanderproductions.com.